So before we go into our final discussion from our presenters regarding unification, we must also mention the role of volunteers. There are many people who feel that they have much to offer and who are currently entering healthcare facilities with little or no training at all of what to expect when they're in the hospital itself. Many are doing great service in providing diversional therapy and respite, and yet there are many who are very eager, who sometimes really have not delved into the issues of who the experience is really for. As anyone in the trained fields will attest to, it is so important to understand the effects of medications, to understand hospital protocols, to understand the power of sound, for it can be used for positive reinforcement, and sound music can also have very detrimental effects. So in our final discussion, we would like to hear from each of the presenters on how they envision everyone being able to work together. What would you suggest to administrators of facilities to encourage them to build a comprehensive program? Please keep in mind that there is an overlap. For instance, many of the modalities work at the end of life in hospice. So how would these administrators choose who or what program to have represented? All of the modalities seem to be offering training in this area. How would you suggest structure that allows for unity? And finally, what would you suggest as a pay scale for the various modalities, and offer suggestions on how a facility can obtain funds for a music program? Please remember to include your thoughts on Don's program of music design for healthcare facilities and how to include the eager musician who wants to volunteer. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to actually give the mic, open the mic up to Stella, and then to Barbara, and to Joshua, and to Sarah Jane, and to Jennifer. And you all have the mic right now, and let's have one of you volunteer to answer some of those questions. Who would like to go first?
I can go first. This is Barbara.
Okay, Barbara.
Okay. I think that, you know, the best model for this kind of continuum of care we're talking about really has to be based on the needs of the client at any given moment. To say, well, music therapy would be best or therapeutic bedside musician would be better, I think misses the point of what the patient needs. And I think it's really abundantly clear in hospice care, hospice and palliative care. You know, in the process when someone is first learns that they may have a catastrophic illness, they may be facing the end of life, there are still a lot of issues of emotions, fear, anger, problems with family, you know, things that would work well in a music therapy model. But as that disease progresses and as they move towards end of life, I can really see that their needs would be better served by a therapeutic bedside musician and or harp therapist or thanatologist, because that active dealing with issues is really not the point anymore. You know, 9 months away from the end of life, they may still be dealing with that. By the time they're 2 months or a month before or at the point of transition, some of the other modalities would definitely be more helpful. So one of the models that actually has been used quite well in several hospitals in Ireland is to have an office, a department of therapeutic music or hospital music program where you have a coordinator, someone who could be helpful in saying this patient X is now at a point where the thanatologist would come in and then let a thanatologist work with them, and who could also then coordinate and supervise the volunteers, put them in places where they're needed, work with them, maybe give them some kind of orientation or training, you know, minimal kinds of basic things make sure that the music is distributed throughout the facility so that hospice isn't the only place that music is being used, but there's, you know, it's spread through the other departments, the other things. And I think Don's music then comes in as an overall commitment to music, to the special music that he has for each of the areas. It may not be fiscally possible to have live musicians in every treatment center in the hospital, but a program like Don's that, you know, is geared towards certain areas would fill in that gap, and the coordinator could also then help the hospital administration decide where that might be used, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I have no idea how much money I'm talking here, but I think that they could employ some people full-time, perhaps some people part-time or on an on-call basis, depending, and as the need arises, shift the employment patterns. You know, if the need really is for thanatologists, then maybe we have a full-time thanatologist or two full-time thanatologists, but look at the overall pattern of usage and importance in a comprehensive program for the needs of the patients, the families, and the staff, the nurses, the doctors, and the other staff, which is an area we didn't even address here, but I think is also very important to the entire healing environment.
Right. Barbara, what would you suggest for an administrator to be considering if they had a group of people from the different modalities as far as the pay scale, how to deal with not undercutting but recognizing the training?
Well, and that is a very difficult issue because, as Jen was saying, I mean, she has more training than a typical entry-level music therapist has because of her other degree and her background and that sort of thing. So does Sarah Jane. So I, you know, it's hard to say that those people shouldn't be paid as the same as a music therapist, because I could see an argument that they perhaps should be paid more. They have master's degrees. Most of our people don't have, although that's changing very rapidly. You know, I think that, you know, we're working in a world where appearances and degrees and that kind of thing matter. Whether we think it should or not, it does. And so they may have difficulty justifying equal pay or equal status as an employee, depending on the structure of the hospital and their financial concerns. A music therapist, like Jen reminded me, that we are, you know, music therapists also assess clients and set goals and write in records and go to team meetings and, you know, all that kind of professional activity. And not that therapeutic musicians can't also do that and probably should start doing that. But there is a different degree of perceived professionalism. You know, and in terms of unity of all of us, we want to acknowledge, Tina, not only do you have other degrees, but, you know, you have training and experience as a concert harpist. I don't have experience as a solo violinist. I mean, I played in orchestras forever, but you just can't, you know, it's going to be really hard. I think that the person who should be really paid is whoever that coordinator is, and based on whatever criteria. You know, I could see somebody having a music business background in that job, you know, and then consult with the other practitioners as to where they can be used.
Point.
I think it's just, but it's critical to have a key person who is going to kind of keep track of it all, so that it isn't hit and miss, so that it isn't sort of wasting resources. It's utilizing volunteers, but in an appropriate way, and supervising them. I am really big on supervising the volunteers.
I agree. Can we have somebody else join in? Sarah Jane?
I was just thinking, Barb, your ideas are excellent, and I just brought to mind, why not have people develop their own business where you have associates of the various disciplines and market contracts with hospitals. And then you'd have your coordinator within the group.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an excellent idea.
And, of course, to be able to have them have a good understanding of what we're talking about today, what everybody
right.
does and
right.
work toward that unification.
And we're realizing more and more in music therapy that entrepreneurial model is really the way we're going to have to go. Because that full-time job with benefits getting cut left and right here, you know, and there and everywhere. And especially for some of the disciplines who are trying to break into that market, it's not easy, especially when you're looking for full-time positions with benefits. Practitioners that I've heard about that you've talked about, Tina, and what your therapists are doing, Sarah Jane, is I think a model that has a future. And I think this idea of someone creating essentially an agency for this and then marketing the services of the agency might be a very good idea.
Joshua, we have been talking a lot about HARP and HARP therapy in relationship to all of these modalities. But there are a lot of people that are doing sound healing in very different ways. And thinking about that, bringing that those people also into some kind of a program where there's a coordinator, do you have any input on your thoughts about how to advise administrators to create a music comprehensive music program?
Well, I think that it's an excellent question, and I think that it's a complex question, and because there are people that are working in sound therapy, primarily emanating out of the tomatis-based work, that they end up running up against the edges and working with a speech and language pathologist, occupational therapist, a psychologist, because they're working in this space of neurodevelopment and neurodevelopmental issues. That's a very important part of the whole sound therapy field, is the tomatis-based model of filtered and gated music and sound. And when you start to move into that, then that is not necessarily, that's clinical, but it's not necessarily hospital-oriented. Then there are also the programs that are designed. And I know these very well because as a music producer, then I work in and out and around these different psychoacoustic techniques. They're the people that work with binaural frequencies and use binaural frequencies as a means of being able to create an environment that is most conducive to either some kind of clinical work or a rehabilitation work or for general relaxation or anxiety relief. And so then this falls into the area of Don's work of how do you bring therapeutic music into the hospital setting or the healing setting that is not based around an in-person visit but is based around a modality using a CD or digital replication of this work. And so I think that as I've listened to this wonderful presentation, again, it is such a broad field. And to be able to chunk it down, to be able to say, okay, what is it that is based upon palliative care? What is it that is based upon clinical application? And what is it that is based upon people that are there in the hospital for a certain period of time, and then they're going to leave, and hopefully they're healed, and they're moving forward in their lives. And the model that Barbara Crow brought forward, the way that they're using it in Ireland, that I'd not heard before, is actually an extraordinarily interesting model to me. And I think that it is one that would serve very well. And I think I have a feeling that probably over the course of the next 4 or 5 years, it will be very interesting to revisit this and to see where it is that we've come at that time.
That'll be so exciting. Let me ask Jennifer Hollis. Jennifer, how do you see a unification process within facilities, and what advice would you give to administrators?
My initial thought as I'm hearing all these ideas is the importance of both ongoing education and creativity. As I was doing research in the field of music sanitology, what I found is what a lot of administrators will do is they'll make a small initial commitment of time and resources to experiment with bringing music into the environment because they have developed a passion for it and they're excited for it, but they're not quite ready to create a full-time job. But what happens, what they told me sort of over and over again in my research, is that once they had music in the environment for a short period of time, they started to hear from patients and staff, and they themselves felt like, okay, now we can't live without it. And now they were ready to make a larger commitment and to try to find a way to get funding and try to way to get more hours for the musician. So, I think it's one of the challenges of working with music is that it's something that people have to experience. So I think we have to be creative about the ways we enter and also make sure that there's a fit between the modalities that we're thinking about and the institutions that we're serving. One administrator was sharing with me the importance of the fit of the individual with the institution. So, you know, all of these things I think can be conclusions can be drawn about them if there's kind of a short period of time where you're entering into it and seeing if it's going to work out. So I would just kind of offer that as a possibility, that you don't have to go from zero to a full-time job. You could do a six-month trial period. You could do a very part-time job and then see how the institution kind of accepted that. In terms of a structure for Unity, I think, again, education is really important so that all of us as practitioners, patients, the families we serve, referral sources, administrators, understand the differences between the different modalities. So we're educating ourselves, we're educating other people about what we do, that there's enough room for the particular gifts of each modality. And then also this very challenging area where there are some blurry boundaries between, especially people who share a similar interest, a similar instrument, where the approach is very different, the philosophy and the training is different, but perhaps what is seen on the outside looks very similar. So we have to, you know, always commit ourselves to educating ourselves and educating other people about exactly what we do and exactly what we don't do.
And the terminology.
And the terminology, the words, you know, all of that is education.
Thank you, Jennifer. Let's go to Stella. Yes. Stella, what would be some of your thoughts about unification?
Yes, thank you. Geez, so far there's been some great ideas. I wanted to add what I was listening to particularly Barb's offerings there, that the National Standards Board for Therapeutic Musicians is in the process of creating affiliate memberships, which would include affiliates who, for instance, like Sarah Jane Williams' program, falls under the area of education regarding acoustic harp therapy. And then there would be other affiliates who would do exactly what it is that you've all been talking about, which is would be an independent group, which would then supply the facility with therapeutic musicians or thanatologists, or it would be like a place where these folks are already trained, and so they would the facility would just contact the affiliate, and then the affiliate would supply that particular modality. We actually have a couple of organizations that are already doing that, at least one that I can think of in California. Lisa Lenz,
City of Hope.
I believe she is offering practitioners, and also Gentle Muses, which is on the East Coast, offers that service to various facilities. So I think that is also another way to help promote, as Jen was saying, educating the healthcare environment, the healthcare facilities, the administrators in healthcare, to what is available to bring into their facility. I think it's kind of tricky if you have everybody in one facility. I think it definitely would take some careful coordinating because it seems like, as Barb said, the patient is going to drive what modality or what care that they're going to be given. And so depending on at what stage in the patient's care they are at, I didn't really have I didn't really share with you where therapeutic musicians actually do their work, but they, a lot of them start in palliative care, but they also are in oncology, they're in birthing, they're in pre and post surgery, they are during surgery, and they're in like places like neonatal, and so they are basically across the board, and they don't, they play the music that is needed at the time. So it might be something that might be happy music, merry music. It might be sad music, which would need a patient who might be, where we would match perhaps a patient who is slightly suffering from depression, for example. We would use that therapeutically, or we could play soothing music to help people fall asleep. Now, of course, the happy music would be for somebody getting out of surgery because they want people to get out of surgery now. So my comments about we don't just play soothing music, it's really across the board. And so I think it would be really tricky to have everybody in. And, of course, harp therapy, that is a acoustic harp therapy, again, has a place in there as well. So we're talking about recovery. We're talking about palliative care. We're talking about all these different patient populations. And certainly they can all be addressed by either one or more of the modalities that are out there. As far as how to help administrators, it really, I think the healthcare administrators really are the champions for getting an organization or a department or a music department started within the facility. It just takes one champion to really be sold. And what makes them sold is that they have actually witnessed the power of healing music, the power of therapeutic music, and they are completely sold. And then they can go in there and they can start working their magic to help program gets different department get started. I worked in Seattle under a music therapist, and in that facility they had a music therapy department where the patients could come and they could borrow music or they could ask for music to be played. So it's not really unthinkable. It's an area where I think even if they just started with a very minimal service, and then like maybe having a couple, two, three, starting it with me, or maybe just one practitioner, regardless of what modality it might be, just starting it out with just that one would be a good start.